Hi, this is Smriti Kirbanandan, your host for Health Forward Podcast. One of the most important things you can do for yourself is to take care of your health. Your road to discovering an all-inclusive, empathetic, and innovative healthcare ecosystem starts right now. I am on cloud number 9. We all have heard about the summer of 69, but this is my summer of 2022 because I have the legend, innovative, empathetic Bryan Adams, the Bryan Adams. If you are wondering what a singer is doing on a health podcast, then Bryan has been vegan for about 30 years and believes in the power of healthy eating and community. Bryan, grateful for your time. Thank you for sharing this space with me. Welcome to Health Forward.
Oh, thank you very much.
You know, I've been raw vegan for about 13 plus years. And when I started, people thought it was bonkers. But you've been on this journey for about 30 years. Share with us your journey.
Are you still a raw vegan?
You know, it's really hard, to be very honest. I think I would say 75% I'm still raw vegan, but cooked food, but mostly vegan, yeah.
Yeah, so I did that. I went raw for about a year, mm-hmm. and that was probably the healthiest I ever felt. You know, it was incredible. I was also taking herbs to sort of, there was like cleansing herbs, if you believe in that sort of thing. My whole ethos about eating has always been try and get the maximum out of food as you can, but keep food in you as little as possible. When I started becoming a vegetarian, the word vegan didn't even exist. It was just, you're either vegetarian or you're not vegetarian. And then there was some sort of cloudiness about, well, the vegetarian can still eat cheese and they can still eat eggs. I was like, hang on a minute, because I always thought vegetarian was vegetables. You know, you eat only things that come from plants. And cheese and eggs is not a vegetarian diet. It's lacto or it's ovo. But vegetarian is actually vegan. But anyways, I started when I was like 28 years old. It was the beginning of a very special part of my life.
That's amazing. So did people think you were crazy as much as they thought I was crazy, or how was that journey for you?
Anytime you do something that's not part of the regular system of eating, you're going to be looked upon slightly differently. You're from India, right?
Yeah, from South India, Madras, Chennai.
So you know that being a vegetarian in India is not frowned upon at all.
Exactly.
I think India has the most vegetarians in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But in Western society, there is a large vegetarian population, but it certainly has changed a lot in the last 10 years. And I sort of attribute that to the internet and people becoming more conscious just from seeing things more than before.
Right. Absolutely with you on that. So I heard you garden quite a bit. Do you love the farm-to-table concept? And how do you seem to relate food and community? And what are the favorite greens you grow?
I love the garden to table philosophy. I think if you can do that, you're living the life. It's so nice to be able to grow your own food.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you garden quite a bit. Do you take the fresh produce and make food by yourself? Where do you bring that sense of community and eating fresh?
Whatever we don't eat, we pass on to friends and everybody. It's nice to be able to grow things. I mean, I've been trying all kinds of different things. It's really nice to be able to grow your own lettuces and your own rocket and your own aubergine and all these vegetables. You know, you can see how long it takes. Some things take longer, you can tell. And after doing it for many years, you can see what seeds work and pollination and the whole thing. It's an amazing journey.
That's amazing. I also like the fact that you give away to friends and family, you know, kind of preserving food wastage and also addressing nutrition. I just love that.
If we can, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, as you know, Bryan, climate change is such a significant issue right now. And reports have shown that plant-based meats and eating natural have reduced greenhouse emissions by 30 times than meat. What are your views on climate change in this space?
It depends on how controversial you want to get on that subject. But certainly you've touched on it about how much it takes to create the agriculture that we live in the Western world and the amount of water it takes and the energy it takes. And obviously, if the world was more plant-based, then you would cut CO2 emissions immensely. You would probably find a lot of people would be a lot healthier, a lot less sick. But I don't think the society that we live in is naturally geared to making that happen. For example, I have two daughters, and they go to a school with children. There's about 500 kids in the school. And they're the only vegetarians in the school.
Wow.
The parents are much, much younger than I am. Mm-hmm. And it surprises me that there's this indoctrination of children at such an early age to be able to think that eating animals is actually a good thing. I have many friends that have brought up their children as vegetarians, mm-hmm. some as vegans, and they're perfectly healthy. They're strong, they're tall, they're beautiful. And this fallacy that we need to eat animals to be healthy and strong is just not true. Right. But getting back to your question about climate change, obviously I think that if there was more emphasis from the parental level to be able to change the way we think as children, then it would be a better place. But I think that's a long way away.
I'm with you. I think, you know, kids are kids and they eat what's given to them. So, you know, it is a parental responsibility. So do you think schools can start kind of introducing plant-based foods? And in the US, we are doing that a little bit. What's the scene in Canada? Are they even considering that or not yet?
School food has never been a good thing and it probably never will be. People that run the school food business are not thinking about vegetarianism. They're thinking about, and I mean this in quotations, a balanced diet, which means throw everything into the mix. Whereas you could have a perfectly balanced diet just from vegetables, but it would never fly because, again, it comes back to the parents. You're not feeding my children this. You're not. Why are my children eating vegetables? You know, where's the meat?
Right. I mean, I think you're right. It's just educating the parents and also the school system on what's considered a balanced diet, right? So I was hearing one of my friends in New York and her kid was introduced to a vegan meal, and that considered a can of beans and some corn cobs. And I was like, where is the nutrition? It's more about low cost and making things that, you know, higher quantity than the quality. So, you know, I hope parents are further educated and the school system looks at it in a whole holistic format than they are right now.
Someone has to break the cycle within the family to become the next generation of vegetarians or people that are thinking plant-based. You know, most people that are brought up in Western society are brought up thinking that you have to have animal products. And it's indoctrinated from their parents and from their parents and from their parents. And when I became vegetarian, my parents didn't change their ways.
Mm-hmm. And that's right. My parents were like, okay, she's going to become a raw vegan. She's going to sit in the mountains. So, you know, they stuck to their diet while I was like, okay, this is my journey, my calling. So let me go try it out. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to stick through the path. So it's interesting. But plant-based foods, as you know, Brian, it's pretty expensive. Some consider it a privilege. So do you have any tips for people who are trying to eat healthy or even vegan within a budget? What would your recommendations be on a daily basis?
Obviously, if you have a garden, start gardening is obviously the best way. That can supply a little bit of your food. But depending on where you shop, you can shop at expensive shops or you can go and find the markets in town. There's ways of making dinners that will last a couple of days.
You're right. Community gardens, eating local fresh foods, I think that's kind of the way to go. And hopefully natural foods are less expensive than processed foods. But I hear that you're much into philanthropy and I love that you like to serve others and you have this secret space where you're giving people food. Share with us a bit more about what are you doing in that space?
I have a little foundation, but it's not part of something that I advertise. Mm-hmm. I get on with it. I'm in my local community here, I support some of the food banks in Vancouver and we help shelters for women. The foundation has been running for nearly 20 years now.
Yeah, that's a long time. And that's incredible. So are you just working in Vancouver or is this foundation kind of an outreach for you to reach global issues as well?
When I first started it, I did some things in Africa. I did some things in South America. And when I'm traveling, if I encounter something I would like to support, then I do it. It doesn't matter where you are in the world anymore because the internet allows you access to everything. If you find something that you want to support, it doesn't matter what country it is, you can do it.
That's amazing, impressive. So thank you for your service and the good stuff you do for the world. There are 820 million people who are hungry. You know, reducing food insecurity is passion space for me, but reducing hunger and giving access to healthy food is essential collectively. How do you think at a global scale are we addressing this at this moment?
Just a small question you've given me there. First of all, there are NGOs that are going into communities in places like Africa, for example, where they bore for water, giving the community water. There's a guy in New York that was running a club for a long time and he gave it up. He got he was a club owner, and he got so fed up with it, he decided he wanted to do something more with his life. And he created this water foundation called the Spring. And they go into Africa and they give communities water by boring into the aquifer of the earth.
Interesting. That was a good twist. I wasn't expecting a club owner to go into farming or water. So, you know, Brian, one of your favorite songs, 18 Till I Die. We all want to be young. How do you see aging gracefully with a plant-based diet? And, you know, you've done this for so long. What has the experience been in that kind of a space?
Drinking is probably the one thing I would say to everybody. If you want to grow old fast, start drinking. I've seen it with many friends and colleagues, and some of them have made it and some of them haven't through it, because alcohol is such a scourge. If you want to replenish your cells, eating food that has plenty of water in it is obviously the best. I always start my day with a bowl of fruit.
That's amazing. So are you much into a fruitarian, you would say, or that's a wrong assumption?
Well, you said that you're a 70% raw diet. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
really. I would say that I'm probably 50% raw.
That's pretty good.
I start with, you know, obviously eating a lot of fruit in the morning, mm-hmm. and then I wait, and then salads for lunch, and then I lose it somewhere. We're having whatever I'm going to have for dinner, whether it's any number of different things, but usually a cooked dinner.
I do eat a lot of fruits. One, because it's easier, and I have a sweet tooth. I go dates, banana, you know, you name it, I have it. But people question a lot about, you know, where do you get a protein? And I'm kind of tired of answering that question. And, you know, plants have a lot of protein. That's how I get it. I'm very physically active. So do you get the same question or any experience on that topic?
I don't get asked that question. People don't actually talk to me about it anymore. but if I do ever hear that, it's just a nonsense, because at some point, you will be eating lentils and there was actually a chart I saw recently that even things like broccoli and things like that have protein in them. I have actually never met anybody that had a protein deficiency.
I don't think that exists unless you are in a malnutrition state. It means I don't think it exists. So clinically, I think it's wrong. But I think you're right. Initially, what you're pointing to is people have this idea that you need to eat animal meat to, one, get nutrients, and then especially protein, right? But that's kind of the marketing, kind of the world we live in.
I don't know where it comes from, but I would just say that for my family and myself, we don't consciously go and find protein.
Right.
We just eat fresh food, and we eat a balanced and an ever-changing diet, you know, with nuts and beans and lentils and lots of broccoli. So as long as you're getting lots of those things, I think you'll be okay.
So Brian, you are obviously a musician. We all love your music, but you are on a healthcare podcast. We can feel the music uplifts our minds and bodies, and there is scientific evidence that it helps with depression and anxiety. Do you think we can start proposing music as medicine in the healthcare field?
There is a foundation called Nordoff Robbins, which uses music therapy for people. And so absolutely music is there to lift the spirit, and certainly has taken me through some incredibly dark times and lifted my spirit. I'm grateful and thankful to my band and the people that I work with to be able to carry me through, but also that we've been able to carry them through this journey of being on tour and making records and writing songs. And it's an extraordinarily powerful thing, music. I mean, everybody has a favorite song. Everyone has a favorite moment that they can connect with music. And even to my father's last days on the planet, music was the most powerful thing in his life.
Wow. Thank you for sharing, Brian, and sorry for your loss. You know, your songs are obviously, you know, very in touch and sometimes very empathetic and intuitive. Where did that journey start for you? What made you start writing these songs and singing this way? What is that story behind?
I don't know. It just sort of started. Just like your dog barking in the background. I just had something to say. And I started putting ideas down. And when you're in a band as a youngster, you realize after playing for a while that if you want to get out of the club circuit, or you have to write your own music, otherwise you were just going to stay where you were.
Right. No, well, we all love your music, and I'm a great fan. I grew up to that, still listen to it almost every other day. So, you know, I think I've personally learned what is love and how to connect and express, and that's through music. And definitely one of yours. And I do hear that you're a big loyalist, and you've been with the same band and the same troupe for a very, very long time. Share with me a little more about why does that exist? Because in the society now, we kind of just hop around and change relationships.
Well, if you find someone in your life that is really good to work with and you get on, and for example, Keith, my guitarist, has been a friend of mine since I was 16. Mm-hmm. And here we are still playing together, and we're in our 60s now. Right. And I don't see it ending. Right. But why? Because of trust and admiration and respect, and some of the guys that have been there since the very, very beginning, you know, road crew, mm-hmm. all, you name it. There's all kinds of people. My manager has been my manager since I was 18.
Wow.
But there's always going to be ups and downs, and you just got to be able to work through them. There's no magical recipe for it. Because there are people that have come and gone, and that's normal. But you try and hang on to the good ones.
Absolutely. I hear you with you on the loyal. You know, obviously, I heard you released a new song called So Happy It Hurts. Share with us a little bit more about the inspiration and what does that really mean to you at this point?
Well, So Happy It Hurts is just a good feeling song about getting out back onto the open road and kind of the antidote to this sort of isolation that we all had for 2 years. I needed a song to get me up back out there and share my feeling of optimism towards being with people again.
I love the hope and what you bring to the table. And, you know, hopefully we all hear that much more and, you know, be heard with the happiness. But what are your three takeaways for the future of food, if you had to share three?
I think we're on a much better trajectory now than we ever have been in terms of the plant-based world. Mm-hmm. But it's also, as many people that are actually changing over and going to plant-based, there are as many people going to meat. I would hope for the future that people will get more information and the access will become much more available to people to see how animals are treated. Mm-hmm. And that the animal rights thing is a very strong thing, and we should respect all living creatures equally. And the more that message gets put out there, the better it is. We just have to become even more compassionate than we are. It starts at the family level. You have to start to think locally and to be able to act globally. And it really does start at your table in the morning with what you feed your children and how you take care of yourself. Those things are the things that I hope that you'll be able to take away from my viewpoint on this interview. It's all about what parents do and how they treat their children. And hopefully, as the world gets more and more aware, people will realize that it's more about plant-based for their children.
I love that. Brian, thank you so much for joining me today. Such a pleasure. Such a big fan. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This is Health Forward Podcast, and I'm your host, Smriti Kirbanandan.